Okay, we're going to see if we can call the U.S. Embassy in Damascus.
If this is an emergency involving the death, incarceration, or serious injury of an American citizen,
this is the embassy in Damascus. We are hooked into them right now.
Extension, you may dial it now. If you are calling from a rotary dial phone or do not know your party's extension, please hold and an operator will assist you. For the English menu, press 1. For the Arabic menu, press 2.
We're going to hold and see if anybody comes on the line. There are
بين الساعة الثامنة صباحا وحتى الساعة الرابعة والنصف من بعد الظهر. إذا كانت حالة طوارئ تتعلق بوفاة أو توقيف أو إصابة بالغة لمواطن أمريكي اضغط على الرقم 0.
Well, my Arabic is good, but not that good.
الشخص المطلوب اطلبه الآن. إذا كنت تتصل من هاتف قرص أو أنك تجهل مقسم الشخص المطلوب الرجاء الانتظار حتى يساعدك عامل المقسم.
Gunfire reportedly fired near the U.S. Embassy in Damascus, Syria. We have been able to get the phone number, and that is what we've been getting. I wonder if...
Transferring to an attendant.
Well, let's see if somebody answers it. I would not expect anybody to answer the phone there, but you never know. They're probably all huddled away somewhere. Maybe somebody will just walk by and pick up the phone. I hope everyone's okay. Okay, Tom, I'm going to put this on hold. Why don't you just keep listening on that line? We're going to have open lines for you this hour. And the question to you is what do you believe with regards to 9/11? What's your take? Now, also, just a few days ago, I had a chance to talk with Howard Bloom for a special we taped for a series of network stations on the 9/11 movement, what has happened after that horrible day, 2001. Howard Bloom was telling us where he was on that day 5 years ago.
I was in bed. I got a call from a friend in Washington. I tried to put the friend off because I wanted to sleep. The friend said, no, look out your window. Planes. The World Trade Center. And I looked out my window and I rushed to my roof. And what did I see? I saw one of the most beautiful, gorgeous days you have ever seen in your life. A sky of blue that was so perfect it was beyond belief. Just enough clouds in the sky to make it apparent how wonderful the sunshine was. And I heard the screaming of sirens from the local fire station going down the alleys, that is, going down the streets, rushing toward the World Trade Center. And what did I see in the distance? The World Trade Center was like a wrapping of wax paper. You know, when you wrap a whole bunch of wax paper into a torch,
right,
and you light it. That's exactly what was happening to building number one. The day was screaming, this is the perfect day, this is the wonderful day, and there something was happening that was almost beyond belief. I went back on the roof later in the afternoon. All that was left was a giant cloud that covered all of Lower Manhattan. All of Lower Manhattan disappeared. So I watched this thing, George, and for a month I knew something was going on in my gut. I knew that something extremely powerful was going on in my gut, and I couldn't put words to it. I absolutely couldn't put words to it. But one of the things, it turns out a month later, when I was able to talk to a friend who was a magazine editor, and he talked about a story he was doing, a little bit of what was going on in my gut leaked out to me, and part of it was this. I wrote a manuscript in 1988 that tried to warn the West of the danger of militant Islam. That book was published in 1995, considerably revised. That's my first book, The Lucifer Principle, A Scientific Expedition into the Forces of History. It was meant in part as a warning. And I felt totally impotent that I had failed to get that warning across. Because I was trying to warn of almost exactly this phenomenon. And we are still up against it today. And the most important thing about what has changed since 9/11 is that too little has changed.
And here we are now, Howard, 5 years later from that horrible day of 2001. We still have not found Osama bin Laden. We still have not solved many of the problems that led up to 9/11.
What we've done is we turned against ourselves. We have come up with all kinds of theories about how we blew up the World Trade Center, how the Bush administration blew up the World Trade Center in order to make this a military dictatorship. Well, the Bush administration is doing some things that back in the old days of Richard Nixon, we called the imperial presidency. He is overriding the Constitution in many ways. But I'm sorry, there's a real enemy out there. And we don't understand that enemy. We don't understand how different his culture and his way of thinking is from ours. And when I say his, I'm referring to Osama bin Laden. I'm referring to the militarists who run Iran. I'm referring to the militants who run Hezbollah. Those militants said back in the 1980s, and it's quoted in the Lucifer Principle, this is Hezbollah in Lebanon that we're talking about. It's been in the news almost every day for the last month or two. The leader of Hezbollah said, don't you believe for a minute that what Hezbollah wants is an Islamic Republic in just Lebanon. Hezbollah wants an Islamic Republic of the world.
Well, we've got a lot of problems and a lot of work.
A lot of work to understand what we're up against.
Howard, there are a lot of moderate Muslims on this planet.
Yes, and they're squashed. Some of them are my best friends, and I'm not kidding when I say my best friends. One of them is a person, he's a Nobel Peace Prize nominee. He's the founder of the two leading journals on Islamic studies in the Islamic world. He's a former minister of education from Malaysia, and I dearly love this man. But this man spent 2 years in jail being tortured. He is a moderate, and he spent 2 years in jail being tortured. Naguib Mahfouz, who won a Nobel Prize, the first Islamic author to win a Nobel Prize, and who writes books that politically have nothing, they're not political books. They are absolutely not political books. For being too Western, he was stabbed 7 times in front of his apartment.
In the last 5 years, how have we changed? How have we changed as a nation?
We opened our eyes for a tiny moment to understanding Islam, and then we closed them again, and then we went back to sleep. You know how a person who's in depression picks at himself, picks until he makes scabs so that he can have more to pick on? That's what we've done. We've become too introverted when we should be extroverted. We've become too convinced that ours is the only kind of culture and every other culture is like ours. Islamic culture, militant Islamic culture, is not like ours. And Muhammad built militancy into the foundation of Islam. So when a friend like my friend tries to escape from that and tries to rally his friends around pluralism, tolerance, freedom of speech, the things that you and I believe in, human rights, he has serious problems. The people who are taking over his community and speaking on behalf, allegedly, of him are the people who are saying that Islam must be dominant and be the only accepted religion on the face of the planet. There are people like this, like my friend, I don't want to name him because I don't want to make him a target. But people like this, we have to support with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our might.
If someone came up to you and said, Howard, we want you to solve this problem, this worldwide calamity that we're facing, how would you fix it?
I wouldn't know how to do it because my instant reaction would be wrong. And my instant reaction would be to use every bit of intelligence that we've got about Iran's nuclear facilities, since Iran has sworn that its goal is genocide and the annihilation of the state of Israel. That's genocide. It doesn't matter what people it's against or what country it's against. It is genocide. I would pinpoint those targets, and I would do everything in my power to take them out before the Iranians gain nuclear weaponry. And then I'd have to keep a very careful eye on Pakistan, because Pakistan has a nuclear arsenal that it's been building since 1998, and it openly declared when it tested the first Islamic bomb that this was an Islamic bomb. In other words, it belonged to the entire community of Islam. We are very, very lucky in that the head of Pakistan right now is Western.
Well, and you said a key phrase, right now. What happens
well,
if it falls into the wrong hands?
Well, these things change. Just as you're implying, George, these things change. And we have to be prepared for the options. We really seriously have to be prepared.
How do you, looking into your Howard Bloom crystal ball, see the next 10 years on this planet?
Unfortunately, I see the next 3 years as the years in which nuclear weapons are used for the first time. Islam is very different. Militant Islam is very different than the religions that you and I are accustomed to. It's not a religion. It's a complete system that includes a military system, a governmental system, and a legal system. It also includes laws of how you should urinate, how you should defecate, all kinds of minor details of personal life. And that religion, which wants to liberate you and me so we can live by the truth, by the laws of Allah himself, this religion will have nuclear weapons in its hands and will probably use them.
Now, when you said use nuclear weapons for the first time, you meant since 1945.
Yes, we were the ones who sinned by using nuclear weapons for the first time. Many of the sins that those of us who pick at ourselves point out are accurate, but they don't know the history of Islam.
And is there a way out here for us?
I think that the way out is preemptive war. That's a horrible thing to say.
You've never been this aggressive before.
No, but it's the only thing I can see, George. I see the nuclear option coming at us so fast.
You remember I told you a long time ago about my paper in school, and that was we need to take two possible directions. One is that we need to be the most technologically advanced country, keeping our thumb on all the other countries that were beginning to grow to keep technology, and I'm talking primarily about nuclear technology, to keep it away from them. And if that meant war, so be it. Or you let every nation develop as it may and then take your chances.
And I agree with you, the premise of your paper. Taking your chances is not an acceptable risk. Not when you have a country that builds into its constitution dominating the world with one government.
So that's Howard Bloom. We'll be back in a moment with your open line questions, your comments on 9/11, and also following the situation in Damascus, Syria, where gunmen apparently blew up a car outside the U.S. embassy and exchanged fire with Syrian guards in a very bold attack inside Damascus' diplomatic neighborhood. That's all we have right now. And welcome back to the open line portion of Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie, and west of the Rockies you go. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the program.
Oh, am I on?
You sure
are. Oh, that's wonderful. George, thank you for such a great show tonight.
You're welcome.
You're really doing it. There's a couple of comments I'd like to make.
Sure.
Well, first of all, I think Howard is dealing with the effect and not the cause. You know,
mm-hmm.
because if you trace it back to who creates these groups, I loved what Alex Jones said about Al-Qaeda?
Al-Qaeda or whatever.
You know, I rented a movie from the video store this week called Why We Fight. Have you seen it?
I have not.
Well, Why We Fight uses an interesting expression. They call us the United States of amnesia.
Why?
Well, because we're forgetting. We're forgetting about how we create civil unrest and wars, how we instigate and create through CIA and other groups, and then we come in, you know? We forget that a lot of these groups are created, and if you trace it up and trace it up and trace it up, you'll get to the cause.
And they come back and bite us.
Yeah, because, you know, Howard is talking about the effect. What do we do now? But if you trace it back to who's behind it and what the cause is, then we might be getting someplace. Because, you know, if it isn't Syria, you know, if it isn't Iran, it could be North Korea.
It seems like every group we help create they come back and get us.
See, that's just it. We need to do something about the puppet masters, because it will be somebody else. You
yep.
know, it'll be China. It'll be North Korea. So in a sense, Howard is dealing with the effect, but I don't think the cause. So anyway, that film talks about how we got to where we are now.
So what do you think really happened?
Where?
Through the entire 9/11 scenario.
You know, that's interesting, George. As I listened to all of your speakers tonight, I kept thinking to myself, they're not mutually exclusive, the theories. It's all of the above.
Little pieces.
It's all of the above, and there's a blending, you know, and there are pieces of the puzzle, but it's really all of the above.
They may be all right, and they may be all wrong, but pieces can be the same.
Oh, I think if you bring in all of the elements, it's so complicated. It's as complicated as a bill in front of Congress that we're not supposed to understand.
I think you're right. Hey, thanks for the call.
Oh, George?
Yeah?
May I just mention something?
What?
I think it's really, really important, is one thing that America, that we are asking ourselves as citizens, is what can we do? Well, two things came to mind tonight. Did you hear Keith Olbermann on MSNBC?
Not tonight.
Well, you might want to go and hear what he said, because he took a stand very similar to your guest tonight. In fact, he used the I word. He talked about impeachment. But he took a very strong stand against the government and the administration. And I think that if we agree with him, it would be good to back him up, because so few people in the media today are coming out like he did today.
And not a lot of people watch him either, you know.
Yeah. And so anyway, if you go to MSNBC, you might want to, you know, blog or comment or back him up. And the other thing I wanted to mention.
I got to run. Got to run. I got too many calls.
Okay, bye.
Right, thanks. You had your time. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey.
Yes, sir.
Hey, George. I got one thing about this conspiracy. When that plane supposedly hit the side of that Pentagon there was a newscaster was out there, and he walked over, and he said, "This is the 747," and he walked over. And he was showing the wheel of this thing, and he goes, "Wow, that's a pretty small wheel, the 747. And he was narrating it and talking about it, and he goes, "Wow, that must be a really small wheel." And he says it was about the size of a car. And if you ever seen a 747 or a 737 or a 737, those wheels are about the size of a truck.
Yeah, okay? They are huge. That's true.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you. The CIA, the FBI went around to all the mini markets in that area. Now, the Pentagon's got more video cameras than LA County has around it. Okay, why would they need all the video cameras? Well, what they did is they took all of that around there. And if you've ever seen the size of a 747, well, what those planes did when they hit the side of those buildings on those Tower 1 and Tower 2, they took those out, okay? My belief is that when those planes or that cruise missile hit the side of that building, they took out that thing. This guy reported on a very small missile or a cruise missile that hit that thing. That's what hit it. The structural damage that they hit was a bomb or whatever it was. Now, the structural thing that always survives on every aircraft that has ever been damaged in a crash is, because I've flown Cessnas and I've flown a Cessna 152 and a few other things, is that when most planes crash, the thing that always survives is the most structural sound thing is the landing legs. And that's the structural thing that always holds up is the landing
legs. And I don't think we found that, did we, in this case?
No, they don't. And the NTSB never put that thing back together.
Well, that's true. I don't know if there's anything to put back together. I'll be back in a moment. Thanks for your call. Open lines continue on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Robert Schenck will share some of his bizarre true stories that he says he has researched and collected over his entire years. He's put it all in a book called The President's Vampire. So I'm looking forward to that on our next Coast to Coast show. And welcome back. Open lines now, right up to the top of the hour. Then that is it for tonight. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there. Good morning.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Take it away. Yeah.
This is Steve. I met you once a long time ago when you was in Honolulu.
Oh, all right. Great. That was about a year and a half ago.
Yes.
How quickly time goes by, Steve, huh?
Right. And I sent you an email. I don't know if you ever got it or not.
Which one now?
I don't know how I didn't give a real specific title, but it was regarding Paul Williams and my response to what Paul Williams was saying and my endorsement on support for Paul Williams. But anyway, maybe you'll remember later, I connected my tray and the whole thing along with Islam at the very end. But that's not what I really wanted to say. I'm just really concerned about how strong Alex Jones is fully blaming the Illuminati with the setting up of the...
Well, he believes it. That's his, his take.
No, and I agree with him, but I also believe that the highest levels of Islam are in battle and competing with the Illuminati. It's been going on ever since the Knights Templar and the Assassins.
Well, you know, you're right. I mean, and I think that a lot of the people make a mistake if they do not include bin Laden and al-Qaeda in this entire scenario, because whether they were hired guns, like I believe, or part of it in some other form or fashion, you have to look at what's going on here, and these people have been planning this for a long, long time.
Right. I would like to make a mention of something really important. There is a very, very prolific writer of Islam. His name is Maulana Muhammad Ali. Are you familiar with this writer?
I am not, no.
Okay,
honestly.
Well, I wrote this in the email. I gave you reference and the ISBN of several of his books. One of his books, he belongs to the Ahmadiyya Society, which is an old society that goes way back, I would say back to, as far as back as to the Assassins. If I'm not mistaken, he's connected with the Shiites. And one of his books is called The New World Order.
Where is he?
Oh, he's dead.
Oh, he's dead.
He's passed away. He's a very prolific writer.
Well, he's not going to help get on the show then, is he?
No. But his book is it's very important that you get a hold of his book, because it's out of print, but you can still get it through out of print sources. But, you know, like Amazon.com, et cetera.
Okay, let's not pitch his book now, but maybe there's somebody else that we can talk to who might share a similar view. Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. Next up, first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Two things I want to mention here. First, Osama bin Laden is the most wanted terrorist in the world right now. How does a guy who is supposedly on kidney dialysis, who is an old man, evade the most expensive and most technologically advanced military in the world?
I can't answer that. That's a good question.
Okay. The other thing is that, George, you firmly believe in remote viewing.
Yes.
And the accuracy and precision of remote viewing. Would you be willing to ask people like Ed Dames and others to do an independent investigation on what exactly happened on the planes before they hit the towers?
I'm not sure they could do that, but I'm sure we can ask them.
Okay.
We can do that. But, again, I don't know if they're that accurate enough to be able to pinpoint that. Thanks for the call. East of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Good morning.
Good morning, George.
Hi.
It's an honor to speak to you.
Thank you.
Well, this is Kevin from Boston. And I would like to throw a little theory out to you.
All right. Different from what we've heard?
Similar to your second guest on 911.
All right.
When I first heard the guest speak about Israel, I said, that's kind of crazy. But then I thought, the first meeting after the U.S. invaded Iraq, where George Bush had a visit from Tony Blair, they both trotted out one statement, and it was the roadmap to peace in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're speaking about Iraq, but they both used that same line. A year later, Tony Blair came over again, and he used that same line, roadmap to peace in Israel. But we have a war going on in Iraq. I think that the powers that be, not the powers that be that in Israel over here, but the powers that be that are attempting to run the world, has looked at the U.S. and says, listen, you need a presence in the Middle East because war will break out. And this is I think we only see the aftermath of everything. Nobody has the answers, like you say, but I think it's part of the puzzle. Now that we're in the Middle East, when Israel is attacked, it's much easier for us to shift gears over to Israel if we're already in the Middle East than if we're not.
Well, then, you know, there's no doubt, I think, going into Iraq was also to create a buffer zone. I mean, oil was a prime possibility. Trying to get Saddam out was another one. Trying to encircle and protect Israel was also, I think, a prime reason why we are there right now. And the containment with Syria will probably occur and Iran. And, I mean, those are the regions that they're after. And then they concentrate on North Korea. So I think part of your theory is probably pretty accurate. Let's go to our next wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hey, George, Ryan, currently rolling my wheels through Indiana.
Hello, Ryan. There you are. What's up?
I think the cause, the problem, the answer, it all stems from something your guest said earlier that I think I overlooked severely. He said that the government just does not care.
And we've lost you on your phone. Try to get back to us. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi there. Hello. Yep.
Hi, George.
Welcome to the show.
What's that?
Go ahead, sir.
I want to talk about Alex Jones. He's good at investigating things. He ought to investigate on trying to find bin Laden because he hasn't been around since November of 99 or December of 99. And all the films you see on TV about him, they always say, we think it's him. It looks like him. It's probably him. Nobody will ever say it's him in case there's a congressional investigation. Nobody's on the hook for it.
Do you think it is him?
I think he's been dead for a long time.
Well,
you tell me with all the intelligence we have, we can't find him?
I think we know where he is. I think he's still in Pakistan.
I bet you he ain't.
Well, I'm not sure we'll ever find out.
Yes, we will. But I'm not sure who has the body, whether Russia has his body or we have his body. But I tell you, he hasn't been around since about December of 99.
When are they going to wheel him out?
Well, that's a good question. But you can't blame everything on him if he's alive to deny it.
Yeah, and at the same time, they might not want to make a martyr of him.
Right, but I'm go back and look at all of his films that they showed on TV since 9/11. And they always say, we think it's him, it's probably him, it looks like him. They never say it's him.
That's a good point. All right. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Next up, let us go to our next wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Good morning.
Hello, George.
Hi.
Hey, good morning to you. This is Jerry in Spring, and I'm an ex-railroad person. Been with the railroad all my life.
Yeah, what was your job out there, sir?
And I was in signals. And,
okay.
I started out with the Missouri Pacific, and then I quit for a while, and then went back hired on the GH&H Railroad.
We used to call that MOPAC.
Yes, sir, but yeah. GH&H Railroad was owned by the Katy and the MOP.
Yeah. Oh, really?
And that was the first railroad that was built in Texas ever. It started out building a railroad up to the brickyards up in Henderson, Texas, and they ran out of money, and the SP finished the line up there. That's where all the brick came from that built Galveston. But getting back to my theory, I worked on a lot of rail relays. And back in the 80s, they came out with this new stuff they call a butte well or a thermal well. And it would actually, you put this ribbon rail together with this molten iron, and it comes in a powder bag, and the bags weigh something like 25 and 30 pounds a piece. And you put this mold around there and put a couple of pieces of metal down the bottom and pour your powder on top, and then put a little bit of flash powder and set it off with a spark lighter. This stuff is hot. It goes up to 28 or to 3,000 Fahrenheit. It just literally turns to molten metal, and then when it burns through the of two pieces of metal in the bottom of the mold. It runs down there and melts the rail together.
Do you think this stuff is what was used?
Yes, sir, I do, because you can buy those bags. A lot of times those bags get out of date, and when they get out of date, they get a bad weld. So they can reorder the bags by itself. And I think that they had these bags of this powder probably contained in a drum or something, and it was put up close to this support beam that they claim these buildings had support beams that held the middle floors all the way to the top.
Well, they would have had to have had a couple of them all over the place, I guess, right?
Well, if you had just several of them, if you knock out the props, then all you got is concrete waiting on something that has no strength to it, because the gravity's trying to push it downward, and there's nothing there because there's a void there where it's burned out. And then they said they heard explosions, you know.
Yeah, a couple of people reported that.
And the explosions could have been these floors busting through, in other words, breaking in half and going down little at a time, till finally there was enough there to it just all gave way.
So you think it was a controlled demolition too, then?
Well, no, you wouldn't call that stuff demolition. It don't explode. It burns very, very fast and very, very hot.
Okay, but you think somebody planted that stuff?
Yes, sir, I do. Because the powder is a mixture of powder and magnesium and iron, okay? And magnesium, once it starts burning, water will not put it out.
No,
that
is true.
Set a bar of magnesium on fire and drop it in a water barrel, and it'll sit right there and smoke and burn without oxygen or anything, because it creates its own oxygen.
That's true. And what is it in water that is dangerous? Is it phosphorus?
Well, phosphorus, if you take it out of water, that's what it catches on fire.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, Jerry, thanks for your comments. We've got time for a few more calls here. It's a very rapid night. Wildcard Line, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there. Good morning.
Good morning, George. How are you?
Good, sir.
I guess, George, my dad worked with the CIA in the early 1950s, and he was stationed in Cairo, Egypt.
Okay. Was he an agent?
Yes, he was. He was an ex-Korean veteran who spoke Arabic. He was born in Jerusalem.
Ah, okay.
And he had told me stories as a kid that just blew my mind. All of them are coming true now. He told me that the Saudi Arabians and the Egyptians both work with Israel, and that they're tight with the Israeli government. And the reason is the CIA wants fanatics. They chose the Muslim Brotherhood of Egypt and the fanatics in Saudi Arabia because they know that they can. These people are involved in Laden, these people, because they're closed-minded. They actually hate the rest of the majority of the Muslim world. Like my, for instance, if I were to go to Saudi Arabia, I'll be treated like dirt because I am an open-minded Muslim. I don't believe in militantism and fanaticism. You know, my wife doesn't wear a headdress, and we're really treated like dirt if we were to go to Mecca and make the Hajj. It's a known fact that Saudi Arabia was saved by the Israeli army in the early 1960s. They sent paratroopers. It was a secret mission, and the United States also sent in troops. When the educated people of Saudi Arabia wanted to overthrow the kingdom, they got the go-ahead from Abdel Nasser of Egypt. America's the CIA thwarted. My dad was there at the time. The CIA found this out. They sent troops. Israel sent troops to save Saudi Arabia's kingdom. This is a fact. It's documented. Even the king of Jordan has always worked with Israel. He even flew his plane directly to Israel to tell them they were going to be attacking 73. And these are supposed to be the enemies of Israel.
Yeah.
So these people, basically, it's not about Judaism. Judaism is a beautiful religion that I respect. It's not about Christianity. It's about fanaticism on all three religion sides. The evangelical Christians want it because they want Jesus to come back. The religious zealot Jews want their Messiah to come back. And the Muslim Brotherhood, who is Bin Laden, and these fanatics, they're less than probably 100,000 out of a billion, 500 million. They strictly believe that Israel should exist. See, they don't want, if you notice, they've never attacked Israel. Al-Qaeda, two guys, on September 11th, the pilots were from Egypt and Saudi Arabia, two countries that border Israel. They could have easily gotten an Egyptian airplane and attacked Israel. I mean, they fly to Egypt. Egypt flies to Israel all the time.
Well, you know, that's the latest threat, though. They're saying that they may hit Israel and some of the other Persian Gulf states. So let's keep our eyes on that. Thanks for the call. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, Wes in Boise. Yeah, a guy calling a little while ago about the plane going into the Pentagon. He's saying the landing gear would stay intact through 3,200 degrees, plane full of fuel, going 560 miles an hour into a solid brick wall. Nothing's going to be left. It incinerates everything. None of the things that I've heard tonight can be backed up with anything. It's speculation. It's conspiracy. And I think you ought to be ashamed of yourself, George.
I don't think so. I think part of this country is for people to be able to talk about their different views. And the fact that you hung up shows me what you're made of. Next up, let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
This is Kurt in Phoenix.
1 minute to go, Kurt.
Yes, I just had an idea about the Twin Towers. I just think if we allow the terrorists to change our skyline, then I think they're sort of winning, and I think that we need to put the Twin Towers back like they were exactly.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Well,
they've already got their design.
Died, we can, like, name all the offices after them, and it'll be like a living, ongoing memorial, but I think that New York is not New York without those Twin Towers. They're going to put that big new thing up in there, and I think both the towers should be back like they were.
Okay,
and I think
well,
the president should think about that.
I don't know if they're going to change that at all. And, hey, thanks to all of you who participated in the program tonight and all the guests who came up with their different theories as well. David Hawkins had a very fascinating one when he believes some of this could have been a major insurance scam. Very, very different. I had not heard that one before. Well, tomorrow we slip back into a more paranormal-type format, so that's what we shall do. In the meantime, let's keep our eyes on what's going on at the U.S. Embassy in Damascus, where a car bomb apparently exploded and Egyptian soldiers had to take some drastic measures against some of those perpetrators. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ian Punnett, Ross Mitchell, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.